Welcome to the Clearly Podcast. My name's Andy Clark.
I'm Shailen Chidasama.
And I'm Tom Goff.
And this week, special guest time. We haven't had many special guests recently. I think we should do more. But I think we've got a great one for this week. And it's somebody, Shailen, I'm just going to age all of us very, very quickly. Shailen, this is our almost 20 years of knowing each other. And you and I have known Dave for a very similar length of time. So, without going any further, we've got our good friend, kind of former colleague in the Microsoft world, Dave Saunders, formerly of M4 Systems, joining us today. Dave, do you want to introduce yourself?
Hi, Andy. Yeah. Hi, everyone. Yeah. Dave Saunders, been in this industry too long. I think about 25 years. Yeah, far too long.
Yeah.
I thought you were going to say that you knew these from primary school or something.
No,
because it's been 20 years, you know.
Just as well, then.
Yeah, it feels like it at times. All right, so look, the topic of conversation today is the advice as consultants that we would like to give to clients. So I guess the ideal target listener for this one is if you're a client and you employ IT consultants, just focus it on there, IT consultants, if you employ IT consultants in some way, or you're looking to employ IT consultants, what is the advice IT consultants will give to you about engaging, long-term relationships, do's and don'ts, et cetera, et cetera? And we are going to do the opposite, where we beg a client or clients to come and talk about what consultants should do to maximize the engagement. So that's the purpose of today. So I'm going to kick off. We've got a bunch of topics we agreed to talk about. Dave, if you could lead this, that would be great, with Tom and Shailen chipping in and myself as and when. So the first thing we're going to talk about is, how do you find a consultant that fits your needs and your culture?
Yeah, sure. Sounds simple, doesn't it? But you know, I guess it comes back to, it kind of dovetails into a number of other things. But what, as a customer, what do you want? What do you need? What level of seniority of the person that you're paying for this service? So, what is it? What gap are they going to fill in this project? Yeah, in terms of you know, a resource that you're paying, you know, a lot of money for. For the right experience, you know, what prior experience do they need? Are there any, I guess, nowadays becoming more relevant, awkward company culture points? You know, do they need to know all the gender pronouns? I don't know. Do they need to dress a certain way? I don't know. But really, it's you know, this will depend whether it's, you know, BI or business information, or whether it's ERP or CRM. Related activity, you know, what do you need and what level? So before you engage with an external resource, have you actually documented what is the need? And I think that, you know, in 25 years in this industry is you know, the number one mistake that a lot of customers have, that they haven't clearly defined the need. Yeah. So
why is that, Dave? Sorry.
Sorry, go on.
Well, why do you think that happens?
I think that it's the whole process, you know, so it comes from you know, let's say top down, where directors or the stakeholders, you know, key stakeholders will say, we need a CRM system, or we need a BI tool, or we need an ERP system. That then, you know, they secure a budget. So they get a budget for something. And then there's no kind of structure around the engagement. And that's the problem. Yeah. Where they've got a bunch of money. And then they say, right, we're going to go and buy a system. And they do their, you know, their beauty parade of, you know, CRM systems or BI tools or whatever it is. But they perhaps don't have enough communication with the people who actually do the work on the shop floor. Yeah, and I don't know how many times you must have seen this over the years that, you know, the directors and the owners or stakeholders of the business have a clear view of what they're looking to achieve, but it's more from a reporting standpoint. But if you take ERP, for example, they don't really know enough detail about how things are transacted in any system. Yeah. All they care about is, did we make money or not? Can you go and implement a system that shows me how much I made or lost on this given product, this service, without really understanding all the work that goes on underneath their level. Yeah, so that would be my number one. Is the stakeholders are typically senior management, but you need to involve more than senior management to get the most out of the consultant, because the consultant wants to work with the people who do the work. Yeah. But if I roll that back a little bit, so when we talk about how do you manage, you know, your consultant for maximum efficiency, now there's loads you could talk about this, you know, but the number one is structure. Do you have a project plan? Do you have a timeline? Do you have a budget? And then, you know, it's a bit like a roast dinner. Yeah. So you tell them the budget and then they say, that's a lot. And then you say, well, it is, but that's what you want or need. And then it's kind of like, well, you want the laptop without the motherboard or the roast dinner without the beef. You know, what is it? Yeah. So they need to make a choice. Is it realistic? You know, is the budget realistic? Do you have clearly defined requirements? I think, Andy, this has been a topic a number of times. You know,
it's not mentioned it once or twice, haven't we?
It does come up.
You know, and you know, what's the approach? You know, are you taking a, you know, let's look in old terms, a waterfall approach or an agile approach or a scrum approach to the project? You know, how do you want to implement? How does that work with your team? You know, nowadays, from experience, most people now don't have a 300-page requirements document that they've, you know, arduously completed. It tends to be more agile, more scrum kind of sprints and, you know, iterative to put in systems. And I'm guessing that's probably the same with the BI side, Andy. Is that right? Yeah.
Yeah. Rather than me talking, Shailen. To talk through your experience on that one with BI.
I think you're right. It is with that. But it's interesting, you know, some of the points you raised, Dave, where you say top down. I mean, you articulated it very well. Top down, they're looking at how much profit they can make, you know, or they're making, let's say, by certain product levels or SKU levels. Now, that's in information from a requirement perspective. Do you then think, when, and this is what we find as well, when it comes down further from that's the, let's say, the top level, but when it comes down further into actual requirements, sometimes it's diluted. It's okay, but we also may want this, or they may not understand how they want it. Is that, so requirements sometimes, and this is what our experience, are not as clear because it's, you know, where and whoever's providing them may not even understand them.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's one where I can get on my hobby horse about data dictionaries and things, because it's that thing of you get a requirement that says something like, we want to see what our gross profit was for the year. And when it comes down to it, it turns out that every department in the organization has got a different definition of what gross profit is. So it's...
Yeah.
I think there is that bit of getting everyone singing off the same hymn sheet as well.
Yeah, no, that's it. You know, is it a consensus with the whole stakeholder group? Is it all agreed? You know, these are our requirements. I mean, you know, more often than not, the board level, you know, like you said, Shane, they just want to know we're making loads of money. Yeah. But when you get down to the middle tiers of management and things, they've got a completely different perspective. You know, the actual people who are pushing you know, transactions through from A to B, they have a completely different, you know, talk to a management accountant, you know, about how they calculate WIP or work in progress, or how they calculate, you know, gross margin at a product level. The senior directors maybe wouldn't be interested in a product. They'd be interested in a product family or overall, you know, if you sell a service or a car or whatever it might be, they just want to know they're making loads of money. Yeah, but the management accountant, no, they have to know far more detail. So it's really important, you know, that you get those on side and their stakeholders in the whole implementation, whatever it is, whether it's ERP or whether it's CRM, whether it's BI, you need to have an understanding of who performs which task or role to get that information that's needed for the management. Yeah.
Dave, in your mind, how does somebody go about this? And what I mean by that is that your client, your business is manufacturing, for example, and you know your day job is not running IT projects and doing requirements gathering. So, you know, there's probably an argument that a lot of this is outside the, you know, the expertise of the client. You know, I guess in my mind, they need a David Saunders, for example, to come and help them through. Or similar individual. I mean, would you recommend that the client hires an external individual to come and help them through that process and, you know, effectively buy in the expertise to get the project set up correctly to begin with?
Yeah. I mean, since, you know, moving on from my prior days with M4, you know, I've been more freelance or external project management, you know, where I've seen both sides of the fence. Yeah, I've been a partner and I'm now working on behalf of the client. Yeah, but I understand the process and how to work with a client. I think one of the key things that you have to do with any implementation project is you know, have a kickoff meeting with all the stakeholders and all the responsibilities defined. Who's going to do what? Yeah, so whether you're an internal project manager, external director, middle manager, or doer. Yeah, it's really important that everyone has a communication plan and understands that, you know, the whole team will be involved every fortnight. The key managers will be involved every week or every month. You know what I mean? It's that communication is vital. You know, who, when, what, where. Yeah, and that will ensure that everyone knows what's happening. The worst thing, and I've seen it so many times over the years, like I said, is where the senior management dictates what they want, but it doesn't actually, you know, roll downhill to the actual people who do the work and the processes that need to be completed. You know, they have a very abstract view of what. You know, they just, like I said, they want to see the profits, they want to see certain specific reports, but the effort that goes into that is far, you know, requires trapping that data at a certain level. And you know this, being involved in the you know, business analytics side of things, you know, garbage in, garbage out, right? You have to think about it at a low level to get the right output. And that requires engaging with all the stakeholders, not just the people who look at the ultimate output of the reports. It has to be the whole team. Yeah.
Okay. No, that's really useful. Yeah, never assume that people within one organization communicate with each other. I think we've all made that mistake, haven't we? Fallen foul of that one.
Oh,
all right, moving on. So look, if we make the assumption that, you know, that somebody has done an exercise to go and make sure their project is set out correctly, they've done the communication, how do they manage the consultant or consultancy organization, you know, for over the term of the engagement for maximum benefit? And what I mean by that, we've all been in the situation whereby we've been unclear about what we're doing. Projects, you know, have potentially drifted, or we've wasted time because we haven't been, you know, given clear communications on what we're doing and how we communicate and whatever else. And, you know, once you're in the in the project and working on it, what do you do to make sure that you're getting the absolute efficiency out of the consultant? That, you know, obviously, let's face it, we can be quite expensive.
Is that me, Andy? Sorry.
Yeah, Dave, sorry, Dave, I should have said.
Yeah, I mean, I would say use the right tools for communication, be it SharePoint, be it Teams, or, you know, the first thing I do now is set up a team site or SharePoint site and communicate that with everyone that, look, hey, this is where we're all going to go to see what the latest progress is, you know, whether it's a RAID register or, you know, all those typical project management tools. So they're in one place, and any data that needs to be shared or any collaborative documentation is all in one place. Now, it sounds really simple. I just put in a system with another client that without that would have been, you know, just wouldn't have worked. But it went in on time, on budget, went in under time, on budget. And the simple reason was everyone knew where, and this was a startup company, everyone knew where to look. So they weren't used to ERP. They weren't used to CRM. They weren't used to this method of working. Yeah, of having some kind of structure around where they should, you know, they should be looking to know what's going on with the project. So, you know, decide on your tools, be it SharePoint, be it Teams, be it whatever it might be, Power BI, like you said, it, you know, whatever tools you're going to use, make sure that's communicated to everyone, and then set regular meetings, but don't set meetings for meetings' sake. And that's a really important thing as well. You know, how many times have you been sat bored to tears in meetings that you didn't have to be involved in? Yeah.
And I think, Tom, every time I talk to you, you've been doing that.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. Because that is the thing. Is that I mean, I've sat through meetings in the past where there's been half a dozen consultants in there, and you look at the fact that just for an hour is going to cost one consultancy day, pretty much. So that, you know, that's the sort of price that you're looking at when you've got a whole lot of consultants sat in a room together.
So yeah,
you need to make sure there's value in that, you know.
Yeah, I've got a story about that, but I can't say it.
Can you tone it down at all?
All I can say is a major London institution. Let's put it that way. Had a major provider of consultancy services that charged £600,000 to work out a chart of accounts.
Yeah,
that's all I'm going to say.
Yeah.
Now, when you've got 15 people coming back to Tom's point, sat in the room, and you know, expensive consultants, and they're all talking about something that's really quite simple, you know, but they're all there just to, you know, just to burn the time. Yeah. Now, a lot of good consultancy firms, you know, won't exploit the situation, but there are some who will quite happily, if the client doesn't say, well, why do we need two project managers, three consultants, an expert in this, a developer, on a call that's about something that one person can cover that topic, you know? I mean, there is a kind of reciprocal kind of thing where the client has to inform the partner or the provider of the service that, look, we don't need all those people. Because the flip side of that is that the client, the partner might think, well, maybe they do need a developer on this call and the PM and all these other services. Do you see what I mean? Yeah. So they're not going to, you know, if no one tells them no, they're going to assume that, you know, it's beneficial for the project. That's my, you know, looking at both sides of the equation.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, I mean, if a client comes to you and says, I need to get this project manager, these consultants, this developer onto a call, you're going to take it that there's been some thought gone into that, that there is a clear value to all those individuals to be on that call. So it's it is essential, I'd say, for the client to only ask for the people who on a call that they need on that call.
Yeah. And it's a difficult one. I mean, the client will perceive it as you're just trying to take the piss, right? So, oh, sorry, the P word. But they're going to assume
expletives are fine, yeah. Dave. We've gone far further. We've said bad language.
Sorry, Andy. I'm half Irish. It's the Tourette.
Yeah, exactly.
But the client, unless they're going to expect that you're providing all the services. But then I've seen this a number of times where you have regular meetings, and suddenly you've got 12 people on a call, and you're saying, "Well, why are you here? You shouldn't be here." Yeah. That's something the client needs to manage. But coming back to what you said, Tom, is it may be that the topic that you're covering will ultimately require those people to be involved at some stage. So therefore, it's a trade-off. Yeah.
I think there's an element of sometimes the client will see the project as a fixed price project, or treat it as a fixed price project,
and
not a time and material one. And hence why
you
have that multiple times that I say, but why is that person not here? And why is that person here? And then they would expect everyone to be in all of the meetings.
Yeah.
But it's at the point where they see their invoice or a project status report with a burn down, or, where that's when they'll question, well, why are you billing for that person or that person or these resources? That's what we found.
That fixed price. Does anyone do that anymore?
Occasionally people do ask for fixed price, but I don't think fixed price does anyone any favors, because if you're pricing something as a consultancy and you're having to price it fixed price, you're gonna overstate what that's likely to really cost, because you need that contingency in case it goes wrong.
So you have to take the worst case, don't you? Yeah.
But that means that, if it does go wrong, you get stuffed as a consultancy because you end up putting resource into it that costs you more. But if everything goes right, you get screwed as a client because it's cost you twice as much as it should have done. I just don't see the advantage really to anybody in the end to do things on fixed price.
Yeah, I don't think there's a lot of fixed price ones, but they will still treat the engagement as a fixed price or deliverables of an SOW. And clearly not. Sometimes you do see where they may not look at the T&M aspect and say, well, that's the deliverable. But then there were X number of changes.
I have seen it as well, where there was one particular fixed price project I was involved in some years ago now, where the client was making changes like it was time and materials, but wanted to be billed like it was fixed price. because it was actually a fixed price project, but they complained about having to do change requests every time they wanted to change. It's like, Yeah, that's the nature of it. But that was a fun one.
I've had many of those. Yeah, where can you show me in the contract where it says it's fixed price? No. Well, guess what? It isn't. it's time and materials. But you gave us an estimate of X. Now you're saying it's Y. Well, that's because things have changed, and it's not fixed price.
Yeah.
If you're building an extension on your house and it doesn't say fixed price, just expect the worst. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm currently going through that pain. I'm putting in a new kitchen. It's awful. Anyway,
we've got that to do this year.
So I think we covered, Andy, do you think, I think we covered the how do we get the most out of consultants? I mean, all I would say is, consulting is an expensive resource, but it's also a productive resource. Yeah, it's not, you're hiring the right skills to put in a solution. Yeah, you're not trying to train your internal team for a skill that you already have. You're pulling in a resource that you need, and therefore you're paying for it. That's it.
And you're pulling in a resource that you need on an ad hoc basis that you don't want to pay on a full, may not need to pay on a full-time basis. And as soon as things come to an end, then that resource goes. You know, we work on projects. They come and go. And to that point, actually, final question on this particular section, Dave, for you is, it's just, you know, as a client, okay, let me put this the other way around. We've all been involved with engagements whereby there's been previous consultants involved and nothing's documented. Something's been set up. You've got to go figure out what on earth has been set up, why it's set up, the decisions that were made, and there's no documentation. So, you know, your advice to a client on any engagement to make sure that consultant is documenting everything that they go in a way that you comprehend as well. I mean, what do you say to a client about that to make sure they're doing it for their own long-term protection?
I agree 100%, Andy. I mean, it's the biggest problem is handover. Yeah, where I've seen it recently. You've seen it recently, I'm sure. Where you say, okay, this is great. So where's the design document? Design what? The design document, you know, the how you got to this end game. Where's the, you know, the original design and you know, the all the sign off and testing, and it got to this point. Oh, we don't have that. Oh, okay. This is the biggest gap in any implementation is documentation and allocating time to document, because we all know what happens now is, especially, you know, throughout the pandemic, you know, people have Zoom or Teams calls and things, and they record everything. But do you know how long it takes to document a 2-hour recording? It could take, you know, a day of someone's time to actually go through minute by minute, take screenshots, document, you know, the whole process. So it's really important that if it's critical to a business process, and again, you know, criticality is an important point here. You don't need to document everything, but your critical A to B processes, that's what you need to document. Yeah, be it purchase to pay or the key reports that you write, you know, with using analytics, or you know, where the data sources come from, all of those key components you write. You don't need to say, this is how you put in an invoice, okay? You just want absolute critical components that need to be documented, and that shouldn't take as long. If you were to try and document, for example, a Microsoft D365 system, it would take you years probably to, you know, with all the verbiage and all the narrative, that's just not feasible or practical. Yeah. But as long as you document the key things and maybe put a Visio or some kind of visual against it, that's all you need to do. Yeah.
Dave.
You know, but coming back to the reason why would you do that? Exactly what Andy just said, that say you cease a relationship with someone, be it a partner or a supplier, and you move to someone else, they need to pick that up. And is that possible? And they should ask themselves the question, if someone came in tomorrow, be it a new member of staff or a critical process, or be it a new supplier, could they pick up that information there and then and run with it? If they can't, then it's not done properly. That's it.
I think you may have set Tom off on his Tomalog.
No,
I've already
done this one in a relatively recent podcast, which is this whole bit about, you know, people have got this tendency to, if there's some money to be spent, they'll spend it on a new feature and not on the documentation. And I mean, as you're saying, Dave, it's it's exactly the thing that, yeah, people need to be actually putting the time, effort, and consequently money into doing documentation and getting good documentation in place.
Yeah. I mean, I've had this recently, Tom, you know, where for whatever reason, people have left a company and then they said, oh, have we got, you know, a document for this process? And, you know, they've got a document, but is it up to date? No. Does anyone maintain it? No. Does anyone have, you know, an obligation to maintain it, mandated? No. So it's kind of, but this is a critical process in your organization. So you should. Yeah. And it's a key thing. And I don't know. I just think people don't like spending the money now on documentation or the time and effort. But when someone leaves an organization, that's when you realize the benefit. Yeah. That when it's absent and someone else comes in and you have to pay for example, consultants again to come in and rework and revisit something that you spent a lot of money on, that's when it you know, the pain factor kicks in.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And it's not just money, it's just the fact that you've got someone who doesn't know what they're capable, but they don't know what to do because they don't know the process. You know, and then that causes a problem internally for the organization and the cost, you know, impact of you know, doing it all again. It's obvious stuff, really.
But not done very often, is it? Okay, well, look, moving on, and I'm going to run downstairs. I'm going to pick up the three-month-old foster puppy we've got who's barking and barking and barking and give him some attention. So I'm going to ask a question, run off, so I'll be off camera for you guys and get the dog to keep, because I keep on having to mute all the time. What are the things at consultant to customer that we would advise, we'd say, you don't do? Or avoid doing, rather, that happen frequently. And I'm going to go on mute and go and get the dog. I'll be right back.
So, you know, obvious ones are, you know, late payments. Now, if you're a large consulting firm, you can probably, you know, you're fine with that. If you're one of the top five in the world or something, you know, or a large accountancy practice, then late payments really probably don't hurt you. But a lot of the specialist skills, it tends to be more boutique type firms who've got very niche or vertical market specialisms. They need to be paid on time, right? They can't afford, you know, not to be paid on time. So that, I would say, you know, it probably goes for any size of supply, but certainly for most in the industry that I'm aware of, that, you know, late payment hurts. Yeah. And the worst offenders tend to be the big companies on that, which is so ironic. You know, it's not
everybody nodding in the background on that one right now.
I was going to say that there's nothing's going to sour a relationship quicker than a late payment. And most especially if you're an organization that's large enough to never have to pay late, to then keep doing it is really not acceptable.
Yeah, I mean, but one of our worst payers, and I can't, again, I can't name and shame. Well, I suppose I could. No, I won't. I can't.
No, we can't.
But no, it's probably libel and all sorts of bad things could happen. No, but one of our larger customers in the public domain, if you check the web anyway, but one of our larger customers, you know, they were the worst payer. It got to 100 days plus, you know, 120 days. And, you know, we were a reasonable sized company, but we weren't a large company. And it got to the point where it's like, you're really taking the piss. You know, I mean, how do you... you know, we're providing a good service with quality consultancy and wonderful development services and all the rest. And we're very understanding, but it's reached the point now where, it, you know, and these were a big customer. So, you know, the kind of Pareto analysis where, you know, they were a big consumer of our services. So therefore, they consumed a lot of our time and resources, which we could have devoted to other customers who were much better payers. But they were a big customer. And it got to the point of when I think where the ledger ended up being 30% of the ledger was them, you know, and wow. 100 days or 120 days. And it's like, guys, you know, we're going to go bust, you know, if you don't pay us. And the irony of all this is that it was nothing to do with capability of paying, because they were a blue chip organization. They were a big company, had tons of cash and all the rest of it. It was just poor process. Yeah, or the approver was on holiday or something like that. You know, it was nothing to do with ability. It was just, you're not a big priority kind of thing. You know, so I would suggest, if you're engaging with a consultancy practice, and most of them are boutique, who are very good, you know, because they have that strong expertise in a vertical or a particular technology, make sure you pay them on time. That's it.
And I think it's an important point, isn't it? Because as a consultancy, and you've got a number of clients you're working with, that sometimes you have to prioritize resources. And if you have to prioritize resources, what are the things that go in your decision process? One of them for us, I know, here for this little business is, do you pay your bills on time? Because if you don't, you're probably not going to get a prioritization.
Yeah.
Frankly, sorry to say it, but you know, you have to go and make decisions based on, you know, whether you're going to get paid or not, because, you know, we're not here to do free work, are we?
No, and that's the other point. You know, quite right, Andy. You know, how many times have we been asked, can you do some free consulting? You know, you don't go to Sainsbury's or Tesco's and say, can I have this tin of beans for free, please? You know, at the end of the day, well, that's a good point, actually. Where does that decision point come from? So you've got a consultant. Let's think about a scenario. You've got a consultant on the ground who's been asked to do some work for free. Who manages the relationship and who should manage that? Yeah, it shouldn't go to the consultant. Yeah, there should be someone taking on that kind of brokering of, you know, what the decision is, whether something's free or not. That shouldn't be pushed onto a consultant.
Yeah, and I think on that, on both sides, you need somebody who's actually managing the commercial relationship properly there, because what you don't want is a situation where you've got somebody, the client, asking a consultant to do some work for nothing, when neither the consultant nor the person doing the asking has got any control over that commercial relationship as well.
Yeah.
It needs to be kicked up that tree for sure.
I mean, we used to have a kind of a good relationship with customers where we would say, if you didn't believe value was added, and it was kind of, it's an arbitrary thing, but we would say, if you felt a consultant went in and they were crap, yeah, and no value was added for those services, then we would discuss it. But that I can't remember any instance of that ever happening. Yeah, but we tried to be fair with, if, for example, they went in for a technical issue, that was a technical issue, which in that event may have involved Microsoft or other third parties that had to come back, so they couldn't resolve the issue. That's when we would, you know, say, well, in fairness, you know, Microsoft didn't resolve it. We had someone on the ground. Therefore, we're not, you know, we'll come to some arrangement about that. Yeah. So it was always on a fairness basis. But at the end of the day, it comes back right back, I guess, 360 to what we said at the beginning, Andy, was about, you know, who do you need as a consultant and what do you want? You know, if you've got the right person for the right task, you wouldn't have that problem. I think the last one is discounts. You know, when someone says, I'm gonna book you for 10 weeks, and then you're finished in 4. How do you deal with that? You know, I mean, and it does happen, and that's why it's so important to have a strong contract with customers that's fair. But you know, if the realization of what you based your fee on doesn't materialize, then it should be fair for both you and the customer. It shouldn't be one-sided to the customer. It should be that, you know, there's some kind of contingency in that contract that is fair on both sides. Yeah, because I've seen that a million times. I've seen it where, you know, this is going to be a 200-day project. It ends up being 30 days or 40 days, probably because of the caliber of the people that you put in. They're so good that they achieved it a lot more quickly than the expectation. But, you know, you've got a budget for that, you know, as an organization. You can't just write off 150 days of work, you know. So it has to be fair. And customers need to understand that during the contract negotiation process.
Yeah, I think the other one that comes up as well on discounts is when somebody promises that they're going to recommend you to a whole bunch of other businesses, or, you know, there will be more work to come or whatever. And I think, I don't know, maybe 30% of engagements, somebody comes up with that chat. Tom, Shailen, what else do you get?
That's a big one, actually. And, you know, the sort of, oh, if you can give us a discount for this this initial 2-week engagement, there'll be a 6-month engagement to come from it. And to be honest, the answer to that one is usually no. It will tend to be that those initial small engagements will be charged at full price. Now, if that then turns into a full-on longer project, then yeah, we can at that point we can talk about offering a better rate. And it, you know, if on that initial engagement you're late paying, you're not likely to get a better rate on the next engagement or anything like that. So there's all of those things that feed into that. But yeah, so it is one where, so if people are asking for free consultancy or heavily discounted consultancy when you've never had dealings with them before, that's usually a bit of a red flag to me. And that's usually one where we will end up not really engaging with them as a client, because if they're prepared to ask for that initially, all that will happen is people will be asking for further discounts and better terms and more free stuff. So
yeah,
so set that expectation from the beginning, I think.
No, I agree, Tom. I think that the whole point is fairness.
Yeah,
you know, you know, it's like contract negotiation. You know, if you present a boilerplate template contract that you've pulled down from some lawyer site that is vastly one-sided, no, you know, it's just costing people time and money to go through it. You know, much better to say, well, this is fair, and you know, this would work for both of us. So in terms of, you know, the contract, the number of days, whatever the time is, or if they terminate early, it works on both sides. Yeah, it's not just, you know, again, it comes down to fairness. That and I've always found that. I mean, I don't know, in the past, you know, we've had this is a hilarious one where we've had say we did software development for someone and they said, right, so you can't use that code again. Now, in code, there might only be one route from A to B. So you have to use certain elements of code, reuse them, class libraries or whatever you want to call it, you know, but there is no other method, is what I'm saying. But the client was saying, well, you can't. It's our code. We own it. I said, well, no, you don't, actually. It's kind of, this is the only way from A to B.
Yeah.
So therefore, we can't give you 100% ownership of that, and we need to have the right to reuse that. Yeah. So, you know, again, it comes back to that fairness principle, that it has to be realistic. You know, the budget needs to be right. The people need to be right. And it needs to be an agreement with all the stakeholders on both sides. Yeah. But, you know, bottom line, it needs to be fair.
Yeah, no, that's a great point, Dave. Sorry, Tom, you're going to go.
Yeah, no, just to agree with all of that, because, you know, it's the when business works is when it works for everyone on both sides. It's not a case of trying to screw one person over in favor of another. It's is when you've got that balance and it works.
I'd say, yeah, referrals is a big one where they'll ask for discounts. Another one is where they try to compare you as a partner that's gone through certifications to individual contractors or the contract market. And they say, well, I can get this person, we can use this person at this X rate and yours is XX rate. Well, yes, because we work closely with vendor. We have to go through this. We have to go through renewal processes.
It's also a case that we're backed by a team as well. It's not
correct. Yeah,
you know, when one in, if you've got an individual contractor, they get stuck. They've got Google to back them up.
Yeah,
we've got a team to support that. So you know, it's bigger than just that when you're dealing with a consultancy firm.
Yeah, or ChatGPT, where it may not come back with the correct information, or this individual may disappear without any documentation.
Mm. Exactly. Yeah.
No, we've had those many, many times. And then the other ones are, well, we're talking to other partners as well. And so we want to see what you come back with. And instead of this whole, you know, compete on just price, it's showing what you bring, you know, what your uniqueness is. So we've been in this data analytics space for X number of years. We've done this. We can do this. We've got people that have worked there at Microsoft. And it's about how can you really help them? I think the key thing with all of that is a good relationship, as you say, good communication and a good relationship, building that good relationship with the client. Yeah, because if you have a good relationship with the client, and that partner-client relationship is good, they're not going to go through every single line of the invoice, yeah, and say, well, why did you spend an extra hour?
Yeah.
You know, why did this person spend the extra hour? Or they're not going to try and squeeze out of the consultant, oh, by the way, can you just add this, but don't tell the PM? You know, so, but I think, Dave, what you say is about that fair approach and fairness. It has to be kind of forefront of any relationship.
Yeah. I mean, the reason I said that is it's come about so many times, you know, with you know, one-sided agreements, and it's like, oh, not again, here we go again, you know, can't we cut to the chase, not waste another 2 weeks with legal people, and let's just say what's fair and reasonable on both sides, you know, that's it. I mean, but like you said, the obligation is with the customer, and that's one of the key points, is have they defined what they want and what they need? And that is the underlying problem with most customers over my 25 years is, you know, here's the back of a fag packet or a post-it note, you know, that's what we want. And it's, well, that's not enough. You know, how can you apply the right resource? How can you create a plan without the necessary information? And that's the fundamental problem with most, is that they secure a budget and they say, great, we got the go ahead, but they don't know what they want. Yeah. And then they expect you to come in and write what they should be writing. Yeah, because it's their process, their business, their understanding. How can you possibly, you know, know it better than they do? You know, and that's...
I've made that mistake once and I will never, ever make it again.
Yeah.
But that's it's a really good point. They expect you to write it on the project time as well. Or when we talk about... And when we talk about... can you just do this, a freebie? That's exactly what it is. You're writing it, but the project still needs to continue. Right?
Yeah.
You're not going to bill against it.
No, exactly. All right, guys. Look, I'm looking at time. We're at 50 minutes, so we're on a long one today. But it's been really useful. So I'm going to draw things to a close. We've gone through everything. Dave, I think you know any client listening that's unsure about what they should do, I think should talk to a David Saunders. And to that end, how do they get in touch with a David Saunders?
LinkedIn. I'm on LinkedIn or Dave Saunders at gazingclouds.com.
Okay, brilliant. And we'll link those contacts in the show notes as well. So make sure that anybody can get in touch with you. Because I think, you know, Dave, with the experience you've got and, you know, you and I have been working together recently, so I've seen it firsthand, but, you know, just the breadth of experience you have in so many different areas, and you go from project manager to functional consultant to database administrator to being able to talk to the chief exec on their own terms and back again, you know, within the day. So I think, you know, any clients listening and want a great resource to help them, then Dave is absolutely top notch. He'll be able to go and do that. All right, guys. So look, as I say, I'm going to draw this to an end. What are we doing next week? Do we know right now? Have we decided?
We haven't been that organized as usual.
All right. Next week, we'll be back to talk about something. And I'm hoping that Rufus the puppy will have been adopted by then, because his heckling didn't help me during this particular podcast. Bless his little furry 3-month-old cottons. So on that night, Dave, I'm going to say big thank you, mate. That was wonderful. Really appreciate everything you've done. Tom Shalen, thank you as ever. That's it. Goodbye.
Cheers, all.
Thank you. Thanks, all. Thanks, goodbye. Everyone.